buddy Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom's happy he's not up in Alaska. Tom worked many years there. They're having the, what they're calling the worst storm, Tom, in 10 years. Big storm.
Of course, I would have been in Fairbanks behind the Great Wall of the Alaska Range, which protects the interior from stuff like that.
You know, they'll have maybe 90-mile-an-hour winds in places like Nome and then over in
the western coast along the Bering Sea.
But if you've ever been up to Alaska, you know how Fairbanks is protected by, like, you know, Denali.
Yeah, that whole Alaska range, which Denali is the king peak.
Yeah.
Protected from what, though? Fairbanks gets to be, what, 30, 50, 60 below in the winter? I mean, you can't be that protected.
Oh, yeah. I've experienced, you want to know the coldest temperature I've ever experienced?
What is
72
it?
Below.
Oh, my goodness. All right. You just heard Tim Steller, who is with us today. Our guest reporter, we'll introduce Tim in a moment. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, September the 16th, 2022. The Buckmaster Show has worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts at buckmastershow.com, our radio station, 1030 KVOI, the voice for trusted news and talk in Tucson. When we do our telephone interviews, which we will be doing today, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. And of course, the live line will be open for your comments at 790-2040. Our media partners, thank you to Dylan Smith and his team at TucsonSentinel.com. Thanks to Dan Shear and the team at the Green Valley News and Soharita Sun. The Tucson Local Media Group supports us. Their portfolio of publications includes Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. With me in studio for our Friday Focus interview today, Tim Steller. Tim is the famous columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, 2022 Arizona Newspaper Association of the Year columnist. Tim, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Time to introduce our Friday Focus interview today, and that is with Fred Duvall. Fred is the chair-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents. The Board of Regents is charged with overseeing the state's three state universities. Fred was appointed in November of 2018 to his second eight-year term on the board by Governor Ducey. Regent Duvall ran unsuccessfully against Ducey as the 2014 Democratic nominee for governor. He's a former White House Deputy Assistant for Intergovernmental Affairs during the Clinton administration. Fred worked in D.C. in the 1990s as Deputy Chief of Protocol of the United States and Deputy Assistant Secretary of State. Regent Duvall is founder of the Institute for Civil Discourse at the University of Arizona, which was created after the tragic assassination attempt on then Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. Fred Duvall is the architect of the Arizona Teachers Academy that offers students who agree to teach in Arizona public schools free tuition and fees for their program of study. Fred joins us now on the live line from Phoenix. Fred, how are you?
Really good, Bill. Thank you. And I appreciate the thorough introduction, leaving out only a proud Tucson High Badger.
There you go. I gave you the full treatment, man. I gave you the full introduction, which you certainly deserve.
Thank you.
The pandemic led many to question the value of a brick and mortar college and university degree. We had President Robbins was our newsmaker on Tuesday on the show, and he's talking about certainly the word didn't get out about those questioning the value at the University of Arizona, because the UA is recording, chalking up record enrollment. Is that reflected at the state's other two universities?
It is. We're enjoying enrollment growth at all three, and we're enjoying it across all disciplines, both immersion and online, which is great. It's a very strong, you know, way of managing your balance sheet. also the most diverse class that we've ever had at the three universities. That's true of all three. And in the case of U of A and Tucson, the strongest academic class that we've ever had. So all signs positive and not occurring in most states. Most states are still seeing erosion of their enrollment, so we've got a lot to be proud of.
Well, what is different here, Fred Duvall?
Well, I think a number of things. One is obviously, you know, Arizona is an attractive place to come and live. And so, you know, COVID slowed down in migration across both students and just citizens moving. And that's all now robustly returning. Secondly, is that we just have a good product. I mean, University of Arizona is ranked this week, U.S. News and World Report, in the top 50 public universities in the country. Strong in so many disciplines, the national leader in many. I mean, we're seeing that clearly with the Mars and a lot of the space issues. So there's just it's a good offering, a great city in a great state at a great time at a great university. So we're in alignment with the opportunity.
You know, the teacher shortage continues unabated across the country. How has that teachers' academy that program that you instituted and that was adopted, how has that taken hold?
Bill, thanks. It's a key question. We are now, we've got about 3,100 students enrolled in the academy. So we're producing more teachers. Now, that's not a net growth because many of those students would be going into teaching anyway. It's just that we have more than we would have. So hard to say what the net growth is, but it's certainly significant. We just aren't replacing the vacancies fast enough. We're not at scale, and we seek to be at scale. We're going to go back to the legislature this year and ask for support to accomplish that. And in the meantime, the universities are dipping into their own funds in order to make sure that every applicant to the ATA on the wait list gets funded.
Here's Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star. Tim?
Hello, Fred.
Hey, Tim.
Hi. So as Bill said in your introduction, you were a candidate for governor in, that was 2016, right?
2014.
And then, So at some point you became, Governor Ducey, who you lost to in that election, appointed you regent again, which you had been before. How did that happen? What was the kind of rapprochement or whatever that happened between you two to lead you to be on the regents again?
Yeah. I think we're both proud of this. We were friends before we ran. We're part of a group of guys that go skiing every President's Day weekend. And so we'd spent a fair amount of time together, and we made a point of connecting periodically through the campaign and agreeing that after the campaign that we would find a way to work together. Now, as it happens, we did five debates. One of them was in Tucson at the Jewish Community Center. And at that debate, I made the proposal for the Teachers Academy, and he called me on the way back to Phoenix. We were both driving back, and he said, I love that idea. And after I beat you, I'm going to do it, and you're going to help me. And I said, you know, I'm game. I'm going to beat you, but let's do this together. And he kept his word, and that was one of a number of things that we've done together since. We worked together to pass Prop 123. We worked together on the Teachers Academy, and it's been a positive post-election relationship that you don't often see.
Yeah, well, you Bill mentioned you were on the board of the Civil Discourse. What's it called? Institute for Civil Discourse?
Yeah, he's actually, yeah. I think Fred actually, that was Fred's creation.
Okay,
I
apologize. It was, Bill. Thank you.
Okay, so you were a founder of that.
And
obviously this would be an example of kind of cross-partisan collaboration. But, you know, we don't see much of that these days. And frankly, guys maybe are unusual in that you're closer together, although being part of from different parties, than most politicians are these days. Would you agree with that? That you're kind of from an old era where people are closer together?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I would. I would also say there was something about the timing. I can't speak for his thinking, but this vacancy occurred in the window when we had just lost Senator McCain, and the whole country for sure, and particularly Arizona, was sort of having a, if you will, kind of a kumbaya moment. You know, can we possibly find ways to break down the divisions and put country first? And so it was in that time frame that I think these stars were in alignment.
And let me follow up, Fred Duvall. How is that going, the Institute for Civil Discourse?
Going great. And I urge you to, you know, reach out and talk to them directly. They've got programs going in a number of states and in Washington, D.C., with hundreds of elected officials that are identifying areas of common policy pursuit where they're sort of getting past the caucus pressures that exist to find right now they're very big on medical billing issues, but there's a number of different strategies where in the states and in Washington they're really creating an environment for collaboration. And it's really hard because elected officials these days, if you're caught even, you know, having a cup of coffee with somebody on the other team, you get demonized by your base. And it's really an unhealthy environment, and they're doing great work to overcome it.
Let's talk a little bit about the UA Global Campus. This is now pretty much a two-year saga, a little more than 2 years since the University of Arizona purchased the assets of Ashford University, a for-profit online school, didn't have a great reputation at all, a reputation for deceiving students, and it was rebranded as the nonprofit UA Global Campus. Okay, 2.5 years into this, how is this going?
Well, it's picking up acceleration. We're going to actually seek to get the full assimilation of UAGC into the U of A as a separate product, but under the U of A's administrative design, done this year. And this is modeled on a couple other institutions that have done it. Purdue bought what was called Kaplan, been a very successful integration. You first have to clean up the culture. There's no question that Ashford was a mess and they were predatory and taking advantage of people and just some bad actors. But they had some good academic programs, and they, for some financial reasons, they were kind of headed towards bankruptcy. And so we had an opportunity to do a couple of things. One is in consistent with our land grant mission. The U of A has a mission to educate as many people as it can, and to pick up 29,000 students was, you know, attractive. Two is that you really, these days, you want to have a robust immersion offering and online offering. And this gave us the ability to move into scale on an online national offering essentially overnight. So we're in the process of cleaning up the culture, sort of elevating the academic offering, but keeping the momentum alive. And it's going to strengthen U of A's mission and its balance sheet in the long run.
All right, let's talk about my favorite bakery in town, and that's Mona's Danish Bakery. Tim Steller knows quite a bit about Mona's. He's one of his favorite bakeries, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They do a beautiful breakfast, open the doors at 6:30 in the morning, close at 3 Tuesday through Saturday, then Sunday they open at 7 to 2. Breakfasts are fantastic. Tim, what could you go for right now? I'm kind of thinking like a croissant.
Yeah, that does sound good. A
chocolate
good,
croissant?
Nope, just plain.
Just plain. Yep. What about you, Fred Duvall? What's could go well with your second or third cup of coffee of the day?
I'm a cinnamon roll man. I love the sound of that.
Well, cinnamon roll, that's right up the team at Mona's Danish Bakery, right up their alley. They actually produce two cinnamon rolls, the flat traditional circle type, then the more of the dinner roll in a thicker cinnamon roll. So, Fred, you would have you'd have a very difficult choice if you were at Mona's today. All right. We'll have more with Fred Duvall, the chair-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents, after we hear from the other great sponsors. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We continue on now with our newsmaker interview, our Friday Focus interview, Fred Duvall, the chair-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents, which is charged with overseeing the three state universities. Tim Steller is here of the Arizona Daily Star. Tim, why don't you kick it off, segment two, with Fred Duvall?
Sure. I mean, I think the perennial issue that a lot of people have with our universities and colleges across the country is cost, and why it costs so much and continues to go up year after year in most cases. So can you explain that to us? Like, what are the dynamics of college costs, why it keeps going up, why it's so relatively expensive even for in-state students?
Sure, absolutely. And this is something, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to manage. So let me start with this. 25, 30 years ago, Arizona's pricing model was a low tuition, no financial aid model. And people always talk about, gee, I went to the U of A, you know, 30 years ago at $500 a semester. The class was disproportionately of one demographic group. It was high income Anglos, and the retention rates were terrible. I mean, we were graduating 45% of the students that were going. A decision was made, which I think was very smart. It's been sort of transitioned over the course of 10 or 12 years, that we are now a medium tuition state with high financial aid. Two things have happened. One is that by promoting the three universities around the world, our percentage of international and out-of-state students paying the full tuition price is higher than it's ever been. That enables us, using the new aid which we now have and which the institutions pay for. Most states have a state financial aid package, a promise program. We don't. We just have institutional aid. That aid is now used for Arizona students. So long story short, the net average tuition, that is to say the average tuition paid after gift aid to Arizona students, hasn't changed for 10 years, maybe by a point or two, insignificant. It's all being borne by out-of-state and out-of-country students. Secondly, is that as a percentage of the state budget, state investment in universities is a third of what it used to be, or put another way, on a per student basis, it is a third of what it was at its high watermark. So what that means is that Arizona students are paying average tuition what they paid 15, 20 years ago. But our campuses are bigger because we're leveraging these out-of-state students to help pay for it. And we are getting higher retention, more diversity, and higher graduation rates. So we've got some successes, but it is getting increasingly expensive. Obviously, faculty cost, inflation costs, et cetera, impact us like it does everyone else. But we try really, it's a long way of getting to, we try really hard to use every tool we can to keep the average cost for an Arizona student flat.
Mm. And you were discussing gifts there. I don't know. I assume that doesn't include loans, right? When you talk about the net cost, are you also including loans there?
I'm mostly talking about Pell Grants and institutional aid, which is gifts, but there are loans on top of that.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. So how have the federal student loans and that trend over the decades now impacted university costs? Have they pushed them down, kept them up, et cetera?
I don't know that I can give you a correlation. Uh-huh. I mean, I can tell you that to the extent that we are able to help subsidize with federal, mostly Pell Grants, more students, that's good for economic productivity and everything else. Here's the rub on Pell Grants is that when Pell Grants were first created, whatever it was, 30 years ago, it covered about 75% of the average student's cost of attendance. It hasn't changed a dollar. So today it's only about a quarter. So we've had to come up with the difference, either from the state, where we've had some good years, but mostly have had negative years, but primarily through the use of this institutional aid, which results in marketing our universities out of state and getting full pay students.
Okay. And then the recent debt forgiveness that the president announced, what impact does that have on the universities, on students or on the universities as a whole?
I don't think we fully know yet. I mean, it is hoped that more students who are anxious about their ability to pay see this as a way to say, gee, maybe I can afford to go. I mean, this is the biggest challenge. Arizona is 47th in the country in our attainment rate. That is to say, the percentage of Arizonans getting a post-high school degree of some kind, be it 2 or 4 year. And to be competitive in a knowledge-based economy, we've got to get that up. And the key to that is communicating at the 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, sort of in that realm. You can go to the university. We will find a way to help you get through. There is aid available. And that comes from Pell. It comes from the loan forgiveness. It comes from institutional aid. But people, we lack aspiration because folks see the sticker price, which I hope I've been clear, most Arizonans don't pay. But they see the sticker price and they say, my goodness, our family can never afford that. But that's not the reality for most Arizona students. We have aid available.
How about the new vet school? How is that doing here in Southern Arizona?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, Bill. We're very proud of it. And boy, is it in service to rural Arizona, where there is a severe shortage of vets. And it is there hasn't been a new vet school in the United States for about 30 years. So
wow.
This is the most recent one and off to a good start, strong applications from all over the Western states. And so it's going to be a real value add to the institution. I mean, there's a lot of these stories that don't get the front page coverage, but, beyond enrollment, Tech Launch Arizona, a great success story, 300 novel inventions. Really, you can see the energy in downtown Tucson with all of these new startups. The Cancer Center was designated as one of the top 50 in the country. People are coming to Tucson from around the United States. The foundation is having a record fundraising year. You mentioned the vet school. I mean, there's a lot of exciting things happening in Tucson and in Phoenix, where we are the big new initiative this next year is called CAMI, which is an institute on immunology, which is sort of the new cutting edge service in the public health arena. And we're going to have a nationally recognized immunology center within a couple of years in Phoenix. So the U of A is really moving. It's an exciting time.
We got to work out this water situation, Fred Duvall, in this state.
Yeah, our universities are working hard on this. There's a water institute, as you know, in Tucson at U of A. There's also one at ASU, and they're both in service to work with the state. But you know, we've got plenty of research. We need political leadership from seven states that are in the, you know, they're in the Colorado Basin to get to the table and work up a strategy as to where these cuts can be most effectively brought to bear over the next few years, or else the Department of Interior has the federal power simply to impose whatever numbers it wants, and nobody will like that result.
We haven't mentioned this Regents grants. Is this a game changer, and how does it work?
Yeah, thanks. It's one of my sort of prize legacies too. I began thinking about how we do research at the universities, and what typically happens is these really smart folks are, you know, get interested in their discipline, and they're kind of pursuing the edges of new knowledge in their discipline, or they're responding to federal money or philanthropic money, but, you know, they're responding to those incentives. But I wanted to sort of reverse engineer the way we thought about it. And so we came up with this idea, why don't we go to the state and say, you don't have a think tank. You don't have the capacity to address long-term public issues. What are the issues that you're wrestling with where the universities have capacity, and let us be your think tank? And we're off to a fast start. We're doing some water work. We're doing a lot of work in forest health, the bark beetle and things of that kind. We're doing a big new agenda around recycling. Recycling is slowly dying in the United States. Don't know if that's, you know, well publicly known, but China is no longer buying our recycling. And so it no longer pencils out for most small towns. We're sort of re-engineering a recycling strategy. These are areas where we're going to pick two or three at the assignment with the state, where we say, what can we do in service to the state of Arizona and the taxpayers who help support us?
And look at the publicity the university has garnered with the new telescope, the incredible images from the Webb telescope.
No question. I mean, President Robbins was sharing with us literally just yesterday that we are first in space research and in Mars by over John Hopkins, who is second by about 60%. I mean, we are dominant in that arena, and how exciting. And the U of A, when you asked me earlier about, you know, people coming to U of A, we're getting a lot of visibility around all the Mars stuff, and we got a lot of visibility around COVID. As you know, the wastewater treatment research that was taking place at U of A, which enabled them to use sewers to determine exactly what dormitories or what other residence halls were showing signs of COVID, was a game changer. And it was science that was replicated and purchased around the country, and we got a lot of visibility around our COVID leadership.
And that's being used, that technology, now around not only the United States but around the world to track COVID. Let's go back to Tim Steller. Tim?
Yeah, I was interested in what you might think has been the upshot of the kind of growing partisan divide over the value of a university or college education. You saw that especially after this loan forgiveness plan was announced, where people on the right especially were saying how people should not be, the taxpayers in general should not be subsidizing someone's useless, gender studies, to pick an example, degree. To me, that really highlighted something that's been growing for years, which is the idea that a university degree is not worth it. It's a bunch of liberal programming, and you just should go out and get a trade school, you know, certificate or what have you. What do you think has been the upshot of this kind of growing partisan divide over college education?
Yeah, and you know, back to what we talked about earlier, so much of this is based on the advertisement around the sticker price as opposed to what students are paying. But it is a real issue. There's no question about it. So let me answer it a couple ways. First is that the average college graduate over his or her lifetime will make about $500,000 more on average than a non-university graduate. So what's the tax revenue for that? I would argue that it is about four or five times the cost of the modest state subsidy to get that student through. So the ROI, I think, is there on that basis. But secondly, and much more fundamental, where is the United States going to compete with the rest of the world? I mean, we can't compete with China and India on size. We can't compete with Vietnam, Thailand, and other countries on cost of production. We can only compete on innovation. We can only compete by, you know, creating the apples, creating the new inventions, the new ideas, the new technologies that the rest of the world will buy. The only part of the value chain we can own is the top. And that comes in the synergy between smart students and smart faculty doing research, getting educated, and producing students who don't just start with a degree and where that leads, but have the skills of adaptation, because most students today will have 5, 6, 7 jobs in the course of their lifetime. That's all what university students can accomplish.
Okay, Regent Fred Duvall, the chair-elect of the Arizona Board of Regents. Fred, we're going to let you go. Good conversation. Thank you very much, and we'll look forward to the next time we visit.
Terrific. Good to be with you both.
Thanks a lot. Fred Duvall with us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. We'll pause right here. Then I've got some things I want to talk to Tim Steller about right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. Tim Steller is laughing. Tim Steller with me, columnist, laughing uncontrollably because he gave me a quote during the break from one of our candidates for higher office.
Yeah, I have to check that this is real before I read it.
Yeah, do not read it.
I'm not going to read it.
Do not read it. Do not read it, because it could be fake. Yeah. One thing that isn't fake is this, man, this is a huge editorial opinion piece in the New York Times on Wednesday, Tim.
Yeah.
Really showing Secretary of State Republican Mark Fincham is kind of the poster boy of election doubting in the United States. And it's interesting in the article that when Mark Fincham, why he points to why he believes the election, one of the things that he points to, why he believes that Trump actually won in Arizona. He can't believe that Trump did not win in Arizona because he points to the size that the Trump trains continued to grow in his neighborhood.
Yeah, you're talking here about those caravans with people having Trump
called
flags
the Trump
and stuff.
Train.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I've actually heard quite a bit, and it really does help to explain our political divides in this country, because it's 100% true that people who support Trump are extremely enthusiastic about him. There's no equivalent to a Trump train or a Trump boat parade or whatever in support of Joe Biden. But it's not because people don't support Joe Biden. They just don't feel about him the way Trump supporters feel about Trump.
They don't have that deep passion.
It's not the passion. Trump. Yeah, it's just, you know, like a political candidate you choose, whereas with Trump, it's more like a lifestyle that you choose, right?
Yeah.
So, I've heard that over and over, actually. That's, you know, people can't believe the election results because those who were enthusiastic about Trump were so enthusiastic. I think it's completely explicable. I mean, Benny White, who's from here in Tucson, is a Republican, has done the research with some other election experts and shown precisely what happened here in Arizona, which was that people who otherwise voted for Republican candidates did not vote for Donald Trump in the last election. Either they left the presidential choice empty, or they voted for Joe Biden, or I guess there were some other candidates, but mostly it would have been Joe Biden. That explains Donald Trump's loss completely in Arizona, and no Trump train or boat parade or flag is going to really make any difference, because it's not relevant.
You wrote about the governor's race, Hobbs versus Lake. You were talking about that you would like to see them tackle the unaffordable housing issue. But before we get to that, what do you think? Do you think Hobbs deciding not to go one-on-one with Lake in a televised debate is a mistake? I know there was a letter to the editor in the Star today, somebody saying, well, I was undecided. Now I am no longer undecided. I'm voting for Lake because Hobbs is afraid to go one-on-one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got to think it was a cost-benefit analysis or more more to the point, a cost-cost analysis. In other words, Katie Hobbs' campaign obviously knew that not debating would have a cost, a political cost. My bet, and this is not from any inside information or anything like that, is they measured the cost of not debating versus the potential cost of debating.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
And Carrie Lake is not, it shouldn't be that surprising, but she is really good at TV, at interviews, at handling herself in public. She's very natural. You know, say what you will about her policy positions, especially some of the wilder things she said about the elections and such. She's very good at speaking and politicking in person, especially and also on TV. So there's no way she wouldn't dominate a debate with Katie Hobbs.
But would there be, and again, this goes back to the analysis that they did, the benefits, but even if Hobbs was out there, and if I was handling Hobbs as a media advisor, I think I would have had her go one-on-one with Lake, just to get out there, to let Lake say some of these outrageous things. And Lake would continue to say that this election, you know, was fraudulent, that Trump won, and just sit there, let her say this stuff.
Yeah, you would think there would be strategies that a candidate and her campaign could use to know what to do to turn this disadvantage into an advantage. That is,
yes. You know,
yeah, this very talkative, interrupting, know-it-all opponent, you could use her tendencies against her.
Well, I think you could.
I think you could. I mean, there's got, you know, now, I don't know. I assume Katie Hobbs has that skill. She's been around a while. But, you know, it would take some thinking to try to figure out how to make that work.
Now, you brought this up about unaffordable housing. That's not been talked about at all in this campaign.
Yeah, I mean, homelessness has. Mm-hmm. Carrie Lake has a plan that's relatively harsh, but also, you know, it's a plan. It's a detailed plan. Katie Hobbs doesn't have much of a plan, but neither of them deal with housing per se. When I asked, I was surprised to get an interesting response from Katie Hobbs, and this was after our print deadline, but I worked it into the online story. She said she wanted to go after the foreign companies and outside investors that are driving up the prices of homes in Arizona. And that's interesting. I don't know. I don't have any details on how she would like to do that. This was in the context of a broader debate about housing supply that a lot of people think is, you know, needed. We need more housing supply. But, I'd be interested to hear more. And I want to hear, this is truly one of the biggest issues in Arizona right now, but for some reason it's not being talked about a lot.
You know, the BBC profiled the race in Pennsylvania, the governor's race, which in many ways, Tim Stiller, mirrors the race in Arizona. You have a far-right candidate against a more traditional Democrat in that race. And they were pointing out that the Republican far-right candidate will not talk to traditional media, wouldn't talk to the BBC. They had sent somebody over from London just to profile this race. They wouldn't do an interview. They are not doing any kind of traditional interviewing. And that's the way Hobbs has set up this race.
Hobbs or Lake?
Excuse me, Carrie Lake.
I don't know how to phrase this, but it's both a political strategy, defying the traditional media being a message in and of itself, and also just a different way of communicating. If you know what I mean, like she's trying to communicate through non-traditional media.
Yes. Podcasts.
Right. But also attacking the news media as a way to present herself, you mm-hmm. know, And it's silly. It's silly because it's so evidently self-serving. What she does is when she gets a question she doesn't want to answer, she attacks the interviewer. Mm-hmm. It's so obvious what's going on here. She doesn't want to answer the question. So if the question's uncomfortable, she says that's, you know, you bad media people. And you know, she's stalked off several interview sets, and it's all performance, in my mm-hmm. opinion. You mm-hmm. know, it's all a way of attracting a certain kind of attention and buzz and all that.
Well, if you're booking an interview with Carrie Lake in traditional media, not that she would even do it, you better be prepared if she does walk off the set
of
have
course. I mean,
some other programming, some other content to fill in.
Well, I saw this. I watched the forum that the Arizona Chamber had the other day with Katie Hobbs and Carrie Lake, which may be the closest thing to a debate that happens. They were interviewed in succession. And it was fascinating to watch Lake because she tries to seize control even in a forum like that. You know, Hobbs let the moderator, Danny Seiden, ask her questions, and she answered the questions. It was very traditional give and take. Mm-hmm. And then when Carrie Lake got on, she just tried to take control of that event. You know, that's her way. And it could work politically as a way. On the other hand, it could put some people off. Who knows?
Carl has a quick question for us before we let you go, Tim. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah, it's not a question. It's a comment. I don't blame the politicians on the Republican side for not wanting to deal with the normal media or the media that's out there now. Let's face it. They're left-leaning. They're pretty well uniformly Democrat. Anytime that a Republican says anything, you know, it kind of gets smashed into the ground, and they don't do that same sort of thing with the Democrats. I mean, look at the Hunter Biden laptop. That's only now coming out. Look at the stuff with the Russiagate, you know, turning out to be all that false. Take a look at Rosemont. you know, that's not getting a fair share on it. Everything is just, you know, bad, bad, bad.
Tim Stellar.
Oh, yes and no. I mean, I think some of this is true, some of it's false. And it's also kind of a downward spiral where distrust breeds distrust. But I think you have to remember that it's there are lots of good reporters out there doing their job earnestly. And if you really pay close attention to what people are writing, you'll be surprised how much fair reporting there is on the politics. But as I said previously about Carrie Lake, you know, there's also maybe some slant. And then she tries to turn that into a political advantage and exaggerate it. That's Donald Trump did that, too. It is politically advantageous to attack the news media. That's not necessarily just a fair commentary. It's a tactic. It's a campaign tactic. So you have to take that into account as well.
Okay, Tim, we're out of time. What's coming up in the column on Sundays?
Arizona Daily Star? I'm struggling with a real rough one.
One of those days.
I've got a really good column in mind, but I can't say for sure that I'm going to make it work because it's about a statewide candidate for office. I'm trying to write strictly about elections these days because, heck, you know, people need more more information about the candidates and their stands.
Well, back in the day when this happened, when you had these indecisions about your column on Sunday, when we would talk on Friday, you usually would go over to the Rincon Market.
Yep, a beer or two later, I had a column.
Yeah, and then try to hammer something out. All right, we'll find out what Tim comes up with in Sunday Star. Tim, good to see you again. Thanks
good to
for
see
coming
you too,
in.
Bill. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to have Weekend Watch with Matt Russell right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
And time to stir it up, Weekend Watch, with Matt Russell, food and beverage writer and award-winning Tucson publicist, is brought to us by the fine folks over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. You're going to have a great time over in Silver City. Lots to do, hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, and just hanging out in a really neat environment in Silver City. Please visit Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org for info on great places to stay and so much to do. Let's welcome now back to the Buckmaster Show. He's been with us since day one, week one of the Buckmaster Show back in 2011. Here he is, Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great. And on this beautiful Mexico Independence Day, you know, it's not Cinco de Mayo, as a lot of people think, so a lot of fiesta going on this weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it would be very appropriate for El Charro to have something special.
Isn't that right? You know, as I reported on Weekend Watch at the beginning of this year, El Charro celebrates its 100th anniversary in 2022, but Bill, today is the actual day, and they're offering a number of what they call 100 penny specials at each of their local restaurants all night long. For just 100 pennies, you can get a house margarita, you can get a draft beer, you can get an order of mini chimneys. Wow. And if you don't actually have 100 pennies, I'm sure they'll take your dollar bill. Now, they're also going to feature what they're calling a century plate, which is made up of their most iconic recipes from past menus. And that plate is priced at only $19.22. Break open the piggy bank and swing by your favorite El Charro tonight.
Yeah, I think I could find 100 pennies maybe under the under the sofa or around the house somewhere, I'll tell you that. Matt, anything
for me.
Anything going on with the traditional Oktoberfest season?
Yeah, you know, if you're an Oktoberfest historian, Bill, you know that the celebrations in Europe don't wait until October. September is the traditional kickoff, and several spots across town are doing just that. Over at Casa Morana, they're going to be hosting a Stein holding contest and an Oktoberfest market tomorrow at 2 p.m. The Omni Tucson National Resort, they're going to be doing live music, German fare, and plenty of beers starting at 4 p.m. tomorrow. And Dragoon Brewing will be hosting a 4th Avenue pub crawl tomorrow, where their new seasonal Oktoberfest beer will be available at each stop, starting at 5 o'clock at Lindy's, who's providing a German menu to boot. It is Oktoberfest season, Bill, and I am thirsty.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to tailor my workouts to hoist that stein. I'll tell you. How about those that enjoy our homegrown whiskey?
Yeah, you know, rounding out Weekend Watch is an exquisite whiskey pairing dinner at Augustine Kitchen tomorrow night at 5, including selections from Tucson's own Whiskey Del Bac. Now, the distillery co-founders are going to be there in person to discuss their many spirits, which will be intentionally paired with dishes like braised oxtail, coffee-rubbed lamb lollipops, and so much more. Tickets are $120 per person. You can reserve yours today by calling 398-5382.
You've been a busy guy writing for Tucson Foodie. Anything you can tell us about the story, please?
You know, indeed, as Sonoran Restaurant Week comes to a close this weekend, I sat down with a couple of local pitmasters who have created special menus to commemorate the occasion, barbecue style. So you can read my smoking hot story at TucsonFoodie.com.
And you were the taco judge again up in Reno. How did that go over Labor Day?
Yeah, judging ribs, the largest rib competition in the country, 250,000 pounds of ribs, 500,000 people. Let's just say I let another notch out of the old Buckmaster belt that weekend.
Oh, go for it, my friend. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Matt.
Cheers, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, making sure all the podcasts are up in a timely fashion. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks, engineering, producing the show, everybody at Bustos Media Tucson. My final words for before the weekend: be well, everybody. Stay safe. Have a lovely weekend.